Now we have Ann Roosevelt on the line, and we want to talk a little bit about what it was like growing up as the granddaughter of FDR and Eleanor Roosevelt and one of America's most prominent families. And Ann, can you speak to a little bit about your childhood and your thoughts of, as you reflect back now, what it was like growing up as a Roosevelt?
Sure. Well, you know, I think every child just tries to grow up normal, you know, like everybody else. And that's mostly what we tried to do as children. On the other hand, we were, so I am in the middle of more than two dozen cousins. So some of my older cousins had much more exposure to my grandparents. I was born right after my grandfather died. And so I knew my grandmother, but I never knew my grandfather. And that was a time of transition for the family. And my grandmother was, you know, living a very important role as a public citizen and working for working at the UN on behalf of the United Nations, and then also working for all kinds of causes after her UN service that she felt were important. And she was a journalist. She wrote a column every day that was syndicated around the country. So she was a great role model of what kind of life you live when you were getting older. So I think I never envisioned, you know, the retirement was a technical term, and I never really thought that it meant that you stopped working or stopped doing things or stopped caring about being a part of the community and a part of the world. I did spend time with my grandmother in New York at Hyde Park, where her home was. At the time when I was growing up, though, the house at Campobello was kind of closed. My grandmother used it every now and then, but not very often. And then it was sold, and it only came back into the public domain in the 70s and 80s when it was given to jointly to the United States and Canada as an international park. It is so it has grown in prominence. And the first time I went there, I was an adult. And went and actually brought my children, and we had a little family reunion there.
Well, that sounds nice. Now, was the same with Hyde Park? Did that has that been sold subsequently, or is that something that people can visit as a public place to visit?
Oh yes, my grandfather's childhood home is the site of the Presidential Library in Hyde Park. And he gave that to the country during his lifetime. My grandmother then moved to an adjoining property, which we called Valkill. She called Valkill. And she lived there until the end of her life when she gave it to also to the country. So they are both National Historic Sites, and the National Park Service administrates them as public places where you can go, except for now COVID. Everything's closed, but in normal times you can go and visit, and they are wonderful places in the beautiful Hudson Valley. And then, if you're going to take a tour, you should come up to Campobello, because that has developed as a beautiful park, and it tells such a different story of Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt and their lives. It was so different being in, you know, in Maine, or the tip of Maine, on an island. Was so much more relaxed than they could be when they were in New York or Washington or wherever. So it played a very important role in their lives.
Well, getting back to your comments about Eleanor, it seems she really did, after FDR, she really did get heavily involved, not just representing the United States at the United Nations and writing articles, as you've suggested, but really commandeering causes. And she had a pretty significant following and was extremely influential, sort of, if you will, breaking the glass ceiling in a lot of ways. Do you want to expand on maybe a couple of her favorite causes back in the day?
Well, of course, she was very interested in women's rights and their abilities, and promoted women as important in every field of endeavor, whether it was commercial or nonprofit. She was very committed to the notion that we needed to move on from our we needed to react differently than we had as a country to our racial situation. That was quite a learning curve for her. And but when she set out to learn something, she put her whole heart and soul into it. And she was very insistent that we had acted in a wrong way toward other races, and that we needed to bring civil rights to the front and make sure that all of our citizens were treated equally and had the same opportunities to build this country, to be part of this country.
And
she devoted herself to that.
Well, and to put some of that in context, because she was such a pioneer in that regard, I will note that when Social Security was originally passed under your grandfather's pen with FDR, there was only one female in the cabinet, and of course she was a Secretary of Labor, and mm-hmm. And, of course, you know who I'm talking about. She's got a little place in Maine, too.
Frances Perkins, absolutely.
Frances Perkins. And apparently, now I just know this from reading history. I'm not positive what went on. But she tried to push that Social Security would be there to cover women in the workplace, too. And that just couldn't happen in that day and age. And my guess is these are some of the things that your grandmother really fought hard for. But just, to put in context, even with a lot of the racial issues back then, there were people that were probably troubled by the fact that Eleanor was so outspoken and had these articles. And yes.
Yeah, well, so she pushed for a lot of causes that weren't successful in her lifetime. But that didn't mean that she didn't keep on pushing. But she also got death threats. There were a number of times when, the podium where she was going to speak, it was discovered that it had been, there was dynamite there. She didn't let any of that deter her. And I never, ever heard her speak of being afraid to speak up. She wasn't going to give in to that kind of intimidation. I remember as a child, though, that some of the kids in my school would call her pink, meaning that she was a communist.
Oh,
and I didn't understand that. I knew she liked blue, but I didn't I didn't know what the pink thing was. And she certainly wasn't in any sense a communist or a socialist. She was very much an American, and she believed, she was a rock solid supporter of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. Every July 4th, we would read the Declaration of Independence before we got to have a hot dog. So it was solidly ingrained in all of us that this is our country, and it is based on principles of freedom and dignity. And it was our job to keep on fighting for that our whole lives.
And thank you for sharing the Roosevelt story with us.
Thank you, David.
With each issue of Maine Seniors Magazine, the new publisher and associate publisher have responses to letters being written, and they call this Marion Jimmy.
Sam writes in, "We have a longtime friend who's a vegetarian, has been for many decades. If it's mealtime and he's here, we always offer him grilled cheese sandwiches or pasta or something that works for his diet. And he appreciates that. My only concern is that he doesn't seem to realize that if most people didn't eat meat, our civilization would have stood still hundreds of years ago. Should I talk about that with him?"
Oh, my, no, Sam. You have no idea how things would have gone if others in the world did not eat meat. The world is a survivor. We would have replaced cows with carrots. You should praise this friend. I do not think he has advanced beyond meat.
And you're so right. I mean, if everyone was a veggie, there'd be no Burger King, no McDonald's, Man, oh man, I'm getting hungry just thinking about it.
Medicare is so confusing. I didn't know where to get help, but I wouldn't call a plumber in Arizona to fix my pipes in Maine. So don't call some out-of-state 800 number to navigate Medicare plans when your help is right here at home. The Senior Planning Center represents all Medicare Health and Part D plans. They have trusted professional experts in every county. You should call them for your free Medicare review.
Call 223-6565 today. That's 223-6565.
Lynn, our next guest is the founder of Community Pharmacies, and he actually founded Community Pharmacies back in 1998 with some other pharmacists. Joe Bruno is his name. He served the Maine legislature for some five terms, served as Republican leader for two terms. He's been a selectman in Raymond for 12 years, also served in the Raymond School Committee while being the town meeting monitor. Moderator. I don't know where he finds time to do all this and run a pharmacy, but we're going to find out. For 10 years, he was the president of the Maine Board of Pharmacy and also served as the chair of the Darago Health Trust. Joe's taught pharmacy law at the University of New England for 7 years. And Joe Bruno, welcome to Senior Power.
Well, thank you, David. Glad to be with you.
You know, I did sort of start the question. Now I got to finish it. I posed it sort of rhetorically, Joe, but where do you find the time to do all this?
I have a great team here at Community Pharmacy, which allows me to free up some time and give back to the community. That's how we started our name, Community Pharmacy. All about giving back.
And you know that for a lot of folks that are listening to Senior Power Radio, one of their biggest issues is the cost of their meds. And they also, of course, need other things like your durable medical equipment and things that your pharmacies know a lot about. Could you speak to me just generically at first a little bit about where you're seeing the industry going in regard to the cost of meds for seniors?
Well, I think the Medicare Part D plan is one of the best things that ever happened for seniors, and it allows them to afford most of their medications. Depending on the plan you have and what kind of deductible plan you set up to pay for your medications, you know, a lot of pharmacists will be happy to help you. And as you know, Brad Dyer at Senior Planning Center will also be happy to help you select the best plan for you. I mean, we have seen prescription prices climb 20% over the last 3 years at the retail level. So it's tough on all of us because we hate to be the bearer of bad news when your prescription prices go up. But we are also there to help you as much as we can to lower the cost of your prescriptions.
Yes, and I think to some extent that the people who are on Medicare, as you say, the Part D drug program, do know and are willing to look at the generic and to look at other options. In particular, many cases, they will learn about a generic, if not from their doctor, perhaps from one of your pharmacists. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, 90% of the drugs that we dispense now are generic drugs, and they are substantially less expensive than brand names. There are many brand names, though, that are not available as a generic, and we can work with you and your doctor to make sure that you have the drug most suited for you in the right therapeutic class.
Now, Joe, since we just came off COVID, I just wanted to touch on this briefly. I say came off COVID. Looks like because of the Delta variant, some think we may be going back around on that. But my guess is your pharmacies were involved in the administration of the vaccine too. Is that the case?
Oh, yes. All our pharmacists were involved. I personally was involved. I traveled all over the state. Worked different clinics, went to people's houses who couldn't get out, seniors who couldn't leave their homes. I was happy to do it. We did, I think, over 15,000 vaccinations ourselves as a company, and we still are doing them. So if you want a vaccination and you can right now. We still have some Johnson & Johnson, the one shot available. We still have Moderna, which is the two shot regimen. We do not carry Pfizer, so that's not available in our stores. But we allow you to walk in, and you can get a vaccination if you need.
That's amazing. That's absolutely incredible. And kudos to you for reaching out to people who can't get to you. That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, if you're going to be a pharmacist and really care about your community, that's what you do. You know, obviously the elderly are the most vulnerable of the COVID virus. So we thought, hey, you know, you call me, I'll come visit you at your house and we'll get you vaccinated.
Yeah, that really is community service right there, and in line with the name of your organization, Community Pharmacies. And you started out with some other pharmacists to build this in 1998. How many locations did you have when you started?
We grew up to 17 locations at one time. We were all throughout the state of Maine, up in Arista County. What happened in 2004, as we grew quickly, you know, there was a lot of financial pressure because it takes a lot of money to open a pharmacy. And as we grew so quickly, and there were some reimbursement rate cuts that happened in 2004, so we quickly downsized at that point. And now, you know, we downsized to, I think, 10 pharmacies at that point, and now we have 9, and we always have our ears open and our eyes open looking for another location that may fit the company philosophy. We enjoy being in small towns, but you have to have a base that will support a pharmacy. It's not easy to make money in pharmacy anymore.
Well, you know, what I'm reading here is that you've got, I'd say the only big city, really, or city is Saco. The rest of them are small communities, but they're around in some cases a larger communities. So there's Blue Hill and Bucksport, Corinth just outside of Bangor, Cornish, Gorham just outside of Portland, Herman, Randolph, and Waldoboro. And it seems that probably those are the areas most in need, because in some of the much larger cities, people have a greater variety of providers. So it seems like you're really where people need your locations.
Yeah, we try and make it comfortable for people to come to us and not have to travel to a big city to get their prescription filled. And I think we do a good job in every store. I think our pharmacists have very good relationships with prescribers and providers, and so I think we are relied upon heavily by the medical community in those areas that we serve.
Now that's really great. Now you as well are a preferred provider, I know, for the Senior Planning Center with the durable medical equipment. Is that something you'd like to expound upon as to you know, what you have, and part of it's your inventory levels of having things, if not in stock, immediately available for people?
I am going to turn this over to my favorite DME person, Michelle, who works for us and has been with me since we started this company. So she was actually with me at another company, and she stuck around with me. I don't know. I must be too easy to work for. But anyway, Michelle can answer that question for you.
Great job. Hi,
and
Michelle.
I'm stubborn because I'm still with him. So, yes, we've been doing durable medical equipment for roughly 7 years. The nice part about how we manage that with all of our locations is it's drop shipped directly to the patient's home. There really is not a whole lot of inventory within the stores, although we can have it available there. However, to make it easier on people, especially during the pandemic, we were able to drop ship directly to their homes and just let them, you know, not have to worry about going out into the public.
Do you have any final words you'd like to share with our audience?
Well, I do encourage people to talk to our pharmacists in the store. You'll find them very caring, very attentive, and aiming to please. And thank you for having us on. We really appreciate talking with you.
And welcome, Gary Crocker.
Oh, my goodness. My family keeps coming up.
And I got to tell you, my grandmother, she was driving a car until she was 93. She was still behind the wheel, safely, apparently. She hadn't hit anything or anybody. We were pretty proud of her. And she was driving one day, and all of a sudden, a blue light, she had two of her blue-haired buddies with her. You've seen them, blue-haired beauties. Well, Grammy was a blue-haired beauty, and she had two buddies who were blue-haired beauties, too. And they went for a ride one Sunday. Nice, beautiful day. And she's in her big American Steel Buick car, 1954 Buick, I think it was. Anyway, she's rambling right along. The blue light, come on. Grammy knows what that means. She pulled off the side of the road. Trooper gets out and walks up and says, "Hello, madam. License registration." Of course, she handed over. She had everything. An insurance card, too. The whole works. And at that point, the trooper kind of leaned into one and he said, "Now, madam, I see you're licensed. I see you're all registered. Everything's good." He said, "But you've got to pick up the pace." My grandma said, "What do you mean I got to pick up the pace?" He said, "Well, you can't drive this slow on a highway." She said, "I'm driving the speed limit." He said, "No, you're not." She said, "Mister, I am going 15 miles an hour. That is the posted speed limit." He said, "Madam, that's the route number, not the speed limit. And by the way, you've got two blue-haired beauties with you here in the car, and they haven't moved. They're frozen in place, almost like statues. They are white knuckles knuckled onto the inside of your car. They're barely breathing. Are they okay?" "Oh, they're all right." "Well, what is wrong with them? Why aren't they moving? Why do they look so scared? Why are they pasty white?" "Well," my grandmother says, "I just got off Route 110. I guess it scared them."
Ooh, that's a good one, Gary, and thank you for joining us today.
So, David, if I want to listen to last week's episode, where do I go to do that?
All you have to do is go to seniorpower.me. That is seniorpower.me, short for Maine, seniorpower.me, and listen to your favorite episode of Senior Power. Next on Senior Power Radio is Diane Walsh, the Executive Director of the Eastern Area Agency on Aging. And Diane, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here.
You know, I have you on for a few reasons. I mean, one is I think a lot of people know some of the work that the Area Agencies on Aging do, but it seems to me that you were more of a valuable asset, perhaps, during COVID than any other time, if indeed you were able to still get Meals on Wheels out because of the social isolation issue. Could you elaborate on that some?
Sure, absolutely. I think you're correct that a lot of people know the Area Agencies on Aging. You said it for the Meals on Wheels program. It's primarily how people associate our organization. But there are a lot of services that the agency offers and increased in offering, as you said, during the pandemic. Isolation has always been an issue as it relates to older adults, but became even more of an issue during the pandemic because everybody had so little contact with you know, just the community in general. So the volunteers that we have that deliver the Meals on Wheels program, you know, even more than ever, were sometimes the only contact that people were having on a weekly basis. So we saw our numbers triple during the pandemic for the Meals on Wheels program. And really those numbers have stayed pretty high. I mean, we've come down a little from the high that we were seeing in November and December of last year, but we're still up there. So Meals on Wheels has been a key program. You know, people, as you said, people became more isolated, and that was true even more so for caregivers. They really, a lot of them lost their support network that they had because people were, you know, isolating in place at home. And so for caregivers, they were looking for any support, even being electronically, you know, by video, to have that connection with people in the community. So, yeah, the pandemic has hit the population that we serve hard, But we were there. We were there for them.
You know, that's just fantastic. And my guess is it's sort of a role model for the area agencies on aging, of having something that both is available with its physical presence for the people that can go to the Durgan Center, but also, as you said, the virtual reach that you have with some of those classes, like you said, will continue to be ongoing, aside from the pandemic, for the point of just having a greater reach to folks further away from the physical center. I think that's fantastic. Are there some other things that you're currently doing at the Eastern Area Agency on Aging that you'd like to share with our listening audience?
Well, I'd like to go back a little bit and talk a little bit more in detail about some of the caregiver programs, because we do really see, especially I would say over the past 4 to 5 years, an increase in the number of people who are contacting us because they are caring for a loved one with an Alzheimer's or dementia diagnosis. And again, through the pandemic, the classes that we had been offering in person, we did offer those virtually. So we do have a support group that's going on for caregivers. We have a class, it's called a Savvy Caregiver class. It's a 6-week program that we offer for individuals who are caring someone with an Alzheimer's or dementia diagnosis. But even outside of that, if somebody just wants to call us because they are caring for a parent or a spouse or a loved one or a partner who is just aging, and they have questions about, you know, what are out there for housing options? What if I want to have someone move in with me? What can I do about that? What services are available? There are just so many questions that as you're becoming a caregiver, and it's funny because a lot of people just do not consider themselves as caregivers. You know, it's the title that we put on it, but other people just, they don't consider themselves that, but they are. We have so many people who are trying to work and also care for a loved one, and they are experiencing a lot of challenges. So what I would say is please contact our agency. I say to people all the time, we may not always offer the service that you're looking for, but I can bet you that almost 100% of the time our staff are going to know who to connect you with in the community that does have that service or that resource. Our staff, one of the things that they're excellent at is knowing the resources that are available in the community. So we're a great place to start if you just are kind of like, I'm not sure where to start. We're a great organization to call.
That is just great. It is very exciting. Thank you for all you do on behalf of our little crew here, Lynn and I at Senior Power, for all you do helping seniors every day through your leadership, Diane, at the Eastern Area Agency on Aging. Thank you again.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Senior Power.
My insurance kept going up and up and up and up.
I was getting a lot of mail about Medicare.
I could never have navigated through the loopholes.
Mainers across the state are finding help at Senior Planning Center, which represents all major Medicare health plans.
Senior Planning Center was a lifesaver.
Senior Planning Center did it all.
Gave me all my options and signed me up with what I needed within an hour.
Call 223-6565. 223-6565. Help when it matters most. Senior Planning Center.com.